Here's an interesting text message on privatised police. Have you had any experiences with police, it asks. Was it less than satisfactory? Maybe private police will be better informed, free from negative culture. Even for a temporary period, it might lift law enforcement's game. It could lead to more investment in them. I don't know if you want to invest in them, do you? Interesting thought, though. 0418 226 576. Now, every week around this time, we take a religious and ethical look at the world with the ABC's online religion and ethics website editor. His name is Scott Stevens, of course, and he joins us now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Willie.
Now, I'm excited about this because we're going to discuss a piece that you've published on your website by Adrian Pabst, which is a good piece, but you said is possibly the best thing you've published. Now, that's quite extraordinary coming from you.
Look, it really is, and I don't say that lightly, but it really is quite an extraordinary piece. And one of the things that fascinates me about it is, for me, it's a symptom of the fact that currently in the UK, to my mind, we have some of the most significant, important, far-reaching, and even radical debates that are taking place anywhere else in the world about the nature of politics, representative democracy, the relationship between state and society. I'd love to be able to speculate with you about what cultural intellectual conditions mean that there's kind of flourishing there that seems to be sadly lacking in the United States and certainly almost completely absent here. But because of a particular ferment that's happening at the moment, there are some extraordinary ideas that are coming up that are really being taken seriously from both sides of the political divide. And this piece is a symptom of that fact.
Now, there's a lot to talk about in this piece, and we're not over-endowed with time, I think it's fair to say. So let's go to it. He's making an argument really about the House of Lords and saying, I mean, there's a big debate in the UK, has been for a while, about the House of Lords and the fact that it's not elected and this is a problem. This is the argument. And he's arguing that it should remain, well, not elected in the conventional sense. It has a different function that's important. And in a way, by not being directly elected by the masses, it would be more democratic. Now, this is quite mind-bending, Scott. You're going to have to take us through it.
It is, and I mean, you've actually summarized it beautifully, and so let me just sort of do a little, you know, a couple little tweaks around the edges. His central idea, I think, is that if you turn the House of Lords, and, you know, could there be anything more irrelevant to us than a discussion about House of Lords in the UK? But I think that's, you know, that misses the point. To turn House of Lords into something like a Senate,
yes,
where there is the same series of checks and balances, there is the same kind of proportional representation. Adrian's point is that essentially, though, as soon as you make this a matter of election, ultimately you're actually drawing from the same shallow pool of those who belong to the political class and therefore those who have been chewed up and spat out by political machinery. In other words, far from being more democratic and more representative, because the pool of people that you can draw from is already so jaded and already so shallow, it actually means that this type of democratic representation is actually less democratic than more. And so what he's saying is, you know, while you would think that there's something kind of obsolete and anachronistic about this kind of peerage, this, you know, this house of peers, where some of it might be, you know, aristocrats, some of them might be those who have distinguished themselves in various fields, some of them might have had the title of Lord conferred upon them as a matter of honor. Mm-hmm. But what Adrian points out, and I think this is really interesting, we have this compact, this contract, don't we, between our elected representatives and individuals. These representatives tend to represent a certain pool of individuals that voted for them. But Adrian says the House of Lords traditionally stands for something other than that. Instead of a representative representing individuals, a member of the House of Lords represents a voluntary association, a group of people who have bound themselves together, who are working together for a common task, who may be participating in a common field of life. They might be unions. They might be trade manufacturers. They might be scientists. They might be those representing the arts. They might be musicians.
Well, they could be church groups, or they could be so all those little elements of society that don't vote, but nonetheless are important in the social makeup.
Yes, and not just are important in the social makeup, and it's not just that they don't have a voice within the political process, but they also bring a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge, but also, and this is the crucial thing that that Adrian points out, a kind of virtue. They bring a virtue to the political process that simply isn't anywhere present, it seems to me, within our jaded and cynical political times.
Except, is that true of the House of Lords? In what way do they actually reflect these different associative elements of our society? I mean, are they really representative of them, or are they actually just a bit of a hodgepodge of privilege?
Well, there is certainly still large pockets of privilege that exist within the House of Lords. But you think about the role that, for instance, the Archbishop of Canterbury has. Think about the role that Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has as a matter of honor. But also you've got the likes, for instance, of Morris Glassman. You've also got the likes of Robert Skidelsky. These are people who have contributed massively to our understanding both of economics but also social life. I mean, Waleed, for instance, can you imagine if instead of simply advising the government, can you imagine if we had a truly high-powered economist within the Senate itself offering this kind of independent peerage onto the political process?
So outside the party system, you mean?
Outside the party system, but inside the political system. And I think that is the crucial point. And I think for me, you know, we're not going to see any kind of revision of this sort in Australia. But I think the deeper question for me is that we're just in the middle of quite a raging debate about those non-political figures who are wielding undue influence within the political process. And Wayne Swan this week, of course, has identified these billionaires. But that for me raises the deeper question, well, who is it that is in fact having influence within the political system? How is it that we can then expand those spheres of interest, but outside of the usual lobbying groups like the Australian Christian Lobby or like GetUp or like the miners or whoever else? And so I think for me, the reason this debate is important for us to have is we need to begin asking ourselves, who are those voices of virtue and experience and knowledge and wisdom, but also who are those representatives of religious groupings, of units of civil society that are in fact influencing, exerting their, I wouldn't precisely say pressure, but certainly bringing their own perspective to bear on the political process in quite an ordered but also a forceful way.
So the problem is if you don't have organic civil society groups represented in the political system, what you get is just well-organized lobby groups that aren't necessarily representative.
That is exactly right. And can I just say that this also goes back to your earlier story about the police. One of the people who wrote in said that the police are an arm of the state. Well, I really have to disagree with that. The police are not the arm of the state. They are, in fact, a symptom of civil society itself. They are actually the expression of trust that ought to be between us. And when that trust breaks down, then we need a kind of external representative who embodies that trust for us. Yeah. And so I think this is precisely our problem when the bonds of civil society have broken down to the extent that they have here, so that we just have states on the one hand, individuals on the other, and then these lobbying groups jostling for position in between, then it really, again, raises for me, where are these places? Who are these people that are going to create opportunities for us to talk about things that really matter?
And how to institutionalize them. Food for thought, Scott, as always. Good to talk to you.
Great, always a pleasure.
We'll speak next week. Scott Stevens, editor of the ABC online religion and ethics website. Now, the Religion Ethics Report tomorrow, of course, it's 20 years to the day since women were first ordained as priests in the Anglican Church in Australia. The issue remains as hot as ever as women priests struggle to become bishops in the Church of England. So they'll be talking about that on Religion and Ethics on the Religion Ethics Report tomorrow here on RN. I'll be back after the news.